Vimes half ran, half staggered over the damp cobbles, out of breath and out of time. "It can't be like this," he thought wildly. "The hero always cuts it fine, but he always gets there just in the nick of time. Only the nick of time was probably 5 minutes ago. And I'm not a hero. I'm out of condition, and I need a drink. And I get a handful of dollars a month without Plume's allowance. That's not hero's pay. Heroes get kingdoms and princesses, and they take regular exercise. And when they smile, the light glints off their teeth. Ting! The bastards." Sweat stung his eyes. The rush of adrenaline that had carried him out of the palace had spent itself and was now exacting its inevitable toll. He stumbled to a halt and grabbed a wall to keep upright while he gasped for air. And thus he saw the figures on the rooftop. "Oh, no," he thought. "They're not heroes either. What do they think they're playing at?" It was a million to one chance. And who was to say that somewhere in the millions of other possible universes it might not have worked? That was the sort of thing that gods really liked. But chance, who sometimes can overrule even the gods, has 999,999 casting votes. In this universe, for example, the arrow bounced off a scale and clattered away into oblivion. Kolon stared as the dragon's pointed tail passed overhead. "It missed," he mouthed. "But it couldn't have missed." He stared red-eyed at the other two. "It was a sodding last, desperate million-to-one chance." The dragon twisted its wings, swung its huge bulk around on a pivot of air, and bore down on the roof. Carrot grabbed Nobby around the waist and laid a hand on Kolon's shoulder. The sergeant was weeping with rage and frustration. "Million-to-bloody-one last, desperate-bloody-chance! Sarge!" The dragon flamed. It was a beautifully controlled line of plasma. It went through the roof like butter. It cut through stairways. It crackled into ancient timbers and made them twist like paper. It sliced into pipes. It punched through floor after floor like the fist of an angry god, and eventually reached the big copper vat containing 1,000 gallons of freshly made mature whiskey-type spirit. It burned into that, too. Fortunately, the chances of anyone surviving the ensuing explosion were exactly 1,000,000 to 1. The fireball rose like a, well, rose, a huge orange rose, streaked with yellow. It took the roof with it and wrapped it around the astonished dragon, lifting it high into the air in a boiling cloud of broken timber and bits of piping. The crowd watched in bemusement as the super-hot blast flung it into the sky and barely noticed Vimes as he pushed his way, wheezing and crying, through the press of bodies. He shouldered past a row of palace guards and shambled as fast as he could across the flagstones. No one was paying him much attention at the moment. He stopped. It wasn't a rock, because Ankh-Morpork was on loam. It was just some huge remnant of mortared masonry, probably thousands of years old, from somewhere in the city foundations. Ankh-Morpork was so old now that what it was built on, by and large, was Ankh-Morpork. It had been dragged into the centre of the plaza, and Lady Sybil Ramkin had been chained to it. She appeared to be wearing a nightie and huge rubber boots. By the look of her, she had been in a fight, and Vimes felt a momentary pang of sympathy for whoever else had been involved. She gave him a look of pure fury. "You! You!" He waved the cleaver vaguely. "But why you?" he began. "Captain Vimes," she said sharply, "you will oblige me by not waving that thing about, and you will start putting it to its proper use." Vimes wasn't listening. $30 a month," he muttered. "That's what they died for. $30. And I docked some from Nobby. I had to, didn't I? I mean, the man could make a melon go rusty." "Captain Vimes!" He focused on the cleaver. "Oh," he said. "Yes, right." It was a good steel cleaver, and the chains were elderly and rather rusty iron. He hacked away, raising sparks from the masonry. The crowd watched in silence, but several palace guards hurried towards him. "What the hell do you think you're doing?" said one of them, who didn't have much imagination. "What the hell do you think you're doing?" Vimes growled, looking up. They stared at him. "What?" Vimes took another hack at the chains. Several loops tinkled to the ground. "Right, you've asked for it," one of the guards began. Vimes' elbow caught him under his ribcage before he collapsed. Vimes' foot kicked savagely at the other one's kneecaps, bringing his chin down, ready for another stab with the other elbow. "Right," said Vimes absently. He rubbed the elbow. It was sheer agony. He moved the cleaver to his other hand and hammered at the chains again, aware at the back of his mind that more guards were hurrying up. But with that special kind of run that guards had, he knew it well. It was the run that said, "There's a dozen of us. Let someone else get there first." It said, "He looks ready to kill. No one's paying me to get killed. Maybe if I run slowly enough, he'll get away." No point in spoiling a good day by catching someone.